I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Well, hey there. Welcome in, everybody. It is a Thursday on Sports Daily. It is Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester. Max Power with us producing, and we are locked and loaded and ready to go. Begin to get you ready for the weekend. We've got all kinds of fun stuff today. K-State insider Tim Fitzgerald joins. This time next week, Tim will be in Ireland and we'll be doing real game prep. So we'll take some bigger picture looks at K-State on this final visit before game week with Fitz. Looking forward to that. We will have that for you. We've got Chiefs talk as they wrap up training camp in St. Joe, all in the books. We will get you through the Royals and one of the more devastating losses, to be quite frank, in the last little while yesterday, a game that has a lot of layers to it that we'll get into. It's all what's on tap. It's all brought to you by the Wichita Brewing Company, which just announced the Kansas Lager Fest. Join WBC along with more than a dozen other breweries for samples and celebration of the crisp, clean brews known as lagers. Go to www.wichitabrew.com to get your tickets now. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Happy Thursday. Looking forward to jumping right in. We're getting closer and closer to football season, NFL right around the corner, college football right around the corner. But more important than any of that, did you listen to the New Heights podcast? Did you check out Taylor Swift with Travis and Jason?
I didn't listen. I didn't. If I do, it's not going to be for a while. I've listened to the podcast, which I think is really funny and well done. Usually only when I'm like on a long road trip or something. So it'll be a while, but I've seen some of the clips here this morning. So I was doing right before we came on the air. It seems like it was good. Seems like it was going to be good for both of them because it makes them probably feel pretty normal. But yeah, no, I don't know if they broke the internet or anything last night.
I think they did. I didn't watch all of it. I caught pieces of it. But you know, it's a pre-recorded podcast, right? And so, but they drop it and air it live on YouTube. And I think at one point there were like 1.2 million people watching it.
Slightly under the YouTube stream of Sports Daily every
usually.
Day.
I mean, like I was concerned that, you know, like now we have a goal that we have to accomplish now. Like we set the bar, they got right up above that, and now we've got to beat them with 1.3 million, I would say.
This is competition for us, is what it is. Our direct competitors, the New Heights podcast.
You know what? I think the comparison though is that New Heights, they've got Travis and Jason. We've got you and me, but then of course they've got Taylor Swift on their show. We have Max Power on ours. Yeah, so it's comparable. Right, it's a comparable cast
Max
of characters,
with the,
I would say.
Max with a really interesting, after we left the air yesterday, Max came off the top ropes. Max, not a Swiftie, it's safe to say. Is that accurate, Max?
Yeah, I don't get it. Sorry.
So Max was railing in a little more, you know, a little harsh language. And I asked Max yesterday after we left the air, I was like, it got to the point where I was like, Max, do you think anybody's good since like 1978? Like, has anybody actually been good since your glory days? And he said, yeah, Seether had a couple of good songs, or 3 Days Grace.
Okay.
Now, I don't know which part of all of this surprised me the most. The fact that I suppose I wasn't surprised that Max is not a huge Swiftie. But the fact that of all of the music that's come out since the 70s that Max says, like, if he was going to cherry pick somebody that was actually okay, it was going to be Seether. That one, that caught me a little bit off guard.
I mean, Seether out here catching strays on a Thursday morning.
Right. Seether's fine.
Yeah. They're fine. Like them and 3 Days Grace. Fine. Like, I don't think it's anything groundbreaking.
Some Dave Matthews is okay.
I love Dave Matthews. See, like, I can get on board with that. I'm a Dave Matthews fan.
Them and Seether, both South African bands.
Fair enough. I mean, I like the Dave Matthews band. I would definitely put them over Seether and 3 Days Grace.
I'm not sure I would.
You're not a Dave Matthews guy?
And that's not a real, you know, like, and this is partly intended for offense your way. Like, okay. DMB people when I was in college were kind of annoying.
I don't consider I'm not a DMB person. I know who you're talking about.
I don't know what they're called. I don't know what they're called, but I
know the kind of people, like the people that are like real big DMB. Yeah. Like that's not me. I don't.
The people where you're listening to a song, you're like, oh, that's pretty good. And they're like, no. You want to know what's really good?
Yeah.
And then
that's
then they
a DMB person. Or the people that, you know, like, I mean, I don't think anybody could tell you that Ants Marching is a bad song. It's a catchy, fun song. But people are, you know, like DMB fans are like, well, there's a deep cut on this particular album, or you got to hear the live version of this, or the unreleased. Like, I just give me Ants Marching, and I'll be fine. I'll be
good. Sounds like
it's a lot like Swifties. I'll be honest, it's a lot like Swifties.
You've run into Fish fans.
Fish fans are the same way. If you're a fan of Fish, you're kind of the same way as a like Dave Matthews band. I would say that those things are pretty
for me. I hear a song I like. I just want to listen to the song. Just leave me alone. Like, I don't need a lecture. I like the song. I don't care what it is either. I like just about every kind of music.
What about Bare Naked Ladies?
I like the Bare Naked Ladies. I've always been a Bare Naked Ladies fan.
Yeah, I'm in on Bare Naked Ladies.
You know, the DMB conversation reminds me of a scene from The Office when Andy Bernard goes roller skating.
He's got to be a DMB fan.
Oh, he is. And he's the only one, like, they're the only ones at the roller skating rink. And the DJ is like, hey, you guys are by yourself. Anything you want to hear? And Andy Bernard goes, yeah, Dave Matthews band, but deep cuts only. And then he starts playing Ants Marching. And he goes, I said deep cuts only. Like, that's a DMB fan in a nutshell right there.
What's your favorite Dave Matthews song?
That's good.
My favorite Dave Matthews song?
I love Gray Street.
Gray Street. I love Satellite. Satellite's probably my favorite song out of all of them.
What would you say?
Yeah, what would you say is good? They've got a library of hits. So I don't get me wrong. I like Dave Matthews Band a lot.
Oh, I know you do.
I don't consider myself a DMB person, though.
That's good to
There's
hear,
a really good distinction between the two.
There is. I think there's a, you know, back to the original conversation, there's a pretty big distinction between a Swiftie and somebody who just, yeah, she makes really good music.
There's also a really big distinction between a Swiftie and Seether and 3 Days Grace. I don't think you could get, like the Grand Canyon is not as big as the gap between Taylor Swift and Seether and 3 Days Grace.
That's a pretty wide gap, but they did lean into a lot of that from the quotes and clips I've seen in 10 minutes before we came on to the show. That's about all I've been able to take in on it. It looks like they had fun, which is good. Like I think it's fascinating to be able to have a normal relationship in their lives. And it feels like that's what they've done. Like a very normal, like, I know they're not married, but brother-in-law ribbing that you get for like, that just all feels normal. And the fact that they can actually pull that off is pretty impressive, to be honest.
Yeah. And Taylor's out there throwing out, you know, phrases like Cover Zero, you know, like different things like that. Xavier Worthy. It's fun. I love that they're self-aware and she's self-aware enough to say, you know, I know that you guys have a big male listenership and this is exactly what your listeners want is more of me on the screen. That self-awareness, I think that was brilliant.
Oh, that makes me like her. I love messing with people. Yeah. And the fact that she's just ready to mess with people is it's good stuff. It was fun. I'm glad they did it. Listen, this Chiefs train of the last 7 or 8 years has been so much fun to follow. And this has been this added layer. I think that's been really fun and cool. I know some people pretend like they're annoyed, but I think even the people that are annoyed enjoy being able to be annoyed by something collectively. And they've given us that, like Max. Max loves to be able to rail on it. Yeah. All right, we've got lots more coming for you here on the show. Sports Talk on KFH presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus coming very soon. We're coming right back on Sports Daily. Don't go away.
What does possibility mean to you?
That's a hard question.
Something that you can strive for.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
You're confident in yourself and you believe in yourself. Stuff that you could achieve.
I feel excited. Anything is possible when you're more confident.
Shoes are a huge part of that. They are the most important part of my style.
You can like express yourself
in the right shoes.
Anything is possible.
DSW, countless shoes at brag-worthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features swift rinse tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It is Sports Daily here on KFH. Thank you to Crestview Country Club for supporting the show here with us. We appreciate their support. It's that time of year, Tommy. School's back in session. I've got an hour and a half today between things right after we get off the air. I'll go play nine holes as quick as I can. And I love that time of year. Like, no, there's nothing to worry about. The kids are at school. So I love that. And at the same time, my wife gets ready to head down to the sectionals of tennis, her tennis league. They're going to Oklahoma City. They're traveling, all of that, because we're having fun at Crestview Country Club. Give them a call. Ask them about their memberships today. A lot of different things that the family can do out there. We appreciate their support. We come back in. Camp's wrapped, Tommy. Chiefs camp is done. It's in the books. I think successful camp. Yes. No major injuries came out of it, which is always where you start with training camp. There's some minor nagging injuries, of course, none of which I think are overly serious. And then we just continue to wait on the Rashee Rice news. Other than that, pretty uneventful training camp for a Chiefs team that's had some eventful training camps over the years.
Yeah, they have. Whether it's been holdouts like Chris Jones and contract negotiations or legal issues or, you know, different things like that that have kind of loomed over training camp, this one by and large has been fairly drama-free outside of the Rashee Rice situation. But even then, I know that's kind of been hanging out there. It's not like anything has really happened during training camp necessarily. So, you know, that's, I think, a positive thing of training camp. Free of a lot of major distractions, and you can really focus on the football. You can really focus on some of those position groups that there have been questions about and how the depth chart is going to be put together and all of that. So that's been nice. It's been a nice change of pace, I think, from previous training camps, and now it's all wrapped up and we can just go full steam ahead for the remaining two preseason games and then into the regular season.
Yeah, it's good. And the Rashee Rice stuff was there before camp. Doesn't have anything to do with camp. I think the other thing we really wanted to see was the development of young players, most notably Josh Simmons. I don't think we're going to be able to notice what young defensive players or rookies are really doing. So it's a little harder for us to see that. But we could clearly see Simmons. And the big thing with him was health, right? But more than anything else, it was, will he be ready to go? That question was answered pretty early on. And now we get to a point where, yeah, he's getting first team reps. He's going to start at left tackle. So I think that was best case scenario. We'll see how good he is. And the other one is Jalen Royals, who may be needed to step into a bigger role And I think Will early in the season, maybe then when they drafted him, they thought, or maybe they did expect this, and that's why they drafted him. It was fourth round, not early, but not late, kind of that middle area. I think we saw what we needed to see out of the young players. Rashard Smith has been moderately quiet, which is fine. But that was the most important question to be answered, was what is Josh Simmons going to be able to give them right away? I mean, Tommy, it was like day one, basically, that he's going to start at left tackle. And we've heard nothing but good things. The evaluations have been almost all positive. And hopefully that solves the biggest challenge for this franchise the last 3 years, probably 2, 3 years, 4 years, maybe.
Yeah. And I think that one of the great things about the whole Josh Simmons situation and his development in left tackle is that because he's got all the attention as the first rounder and a clear deficiency that the Chiefs had that it looks like he's going to be filling, that sort of takes the pressure off some of the other rookies. I think Jalen Royals might be the exception just because of the situation with Rashee Rice. But some of the other rookies, there really hasn't been nearly as much of a spotlight on them, expectations on them, that sort of thing, the pressure on their shoulders. I'm really excited to see Omar Norman Lott continue to develop. Having potentially somebody opposite of Chris Jones on that defensive line, that could be somebody that could make an impact relatively quickly. It sounds like he's had a really, really good camp. And so I'm excited to see his development. Ashton Gelati out there as well. I mean, really the only press that he's gotten was when he got into a fight with Josh Simmons. And so right, he can sort of fly under the radar too, and potentially be a difference maker defensively as well. When you're looking at a Chiefs defense that, you know, by and large has to be anchored by homegrown drafted talent, the more that you can continue to refill that pipeline with younger guys so you don't have to go out and give massive free agent type deals to players that are out there on the open market, the better. That's the blueprint for Brett Veach and the way that he builds this team. And so if you can get Omar Norman Lott and Ashton Gelati and others to step up, that's a huge benefit to Kansas City.
We'll see if they step up. I don't know how to evaluate those guys yet. Defenses don't give you much in the preseason. We'll just have to see. They need one of them to step up, I think, pretty big. It would be nice if both did, but you know, there's talk that Felix Anyedike Uzomah may not make the team. Like, there's a real good chance the Chiefs are thin at pass rush again. They gave George Karloftis a nice contract. They have Chris Jones, but they've lacked there, even with a Minshew back. Like, they've lacked there over the years.
They signed, you know, they got Nick Bolton signed, but he's not necessarily
he's not a pass rusher.
He's not a big disruptive type guy. So yeah. I mean, that's a little bit different.
I think the defense will be fine early in the year, and I don't think it'll matter as much because I think the offense will be better, even with these injuries and Rashee Rice not being there. If Josh Simmons is any good, they'll be better. They'll have Pacheco. They'll have a more receiving-centric Kelsey. Like, they'll be fine. It's just what does the defense give them early? I think it's a good question, right? What does the defense look like coming out of the gates? I would anticipate a little less than last year. That's kind of the expectation I have, with the ability by the end of the year to be right there with the last couple of years if these young players can step in. But I don't know what to expect there. And I'm trying to remember pass rushers in Spags' defenses and how they've done early on. Karloftis had a fine rookie year, but was it right out of the gates? I just can't remember that stuff. So I think probably it's going to take a minute for them to kind of catch their groove, but I think they have that little bit of wiggle room. And maybe they'll far exceed that. They certainly did last year. It's there for them, but they have to have a couple of young players play some key roles.
In the example of Omar Norman Lott, by the way, I mean, you know, he's a second round draft pick, but the Chiefs also went out and got a contingency plan in the veteran Jerry Tillery. So I liked that because it wasn't like Tillery cost them a bunch of money, but they could.
He's had good reviews in camp.
He's had, and in theory, he could always be kind of that bridge player to let a guy like Omar Norman Lott develop and eventually take that spot over. And so that's a really smart move. I think that Brett Veach has done that, pretty regularly, I think, in his tenure in Kansas City, where, yeah, you've got homegrown drafted talent, and then you go out and you get a bridge type player. You get somebody that can bridge the gap. a veteran that's not going to cost you a bunch of money, but you can come in and plug them in right away and let that rookie kind of develop. And so I wouldn't be surprised if that ends up being the strategy for Kansas City. We may not see Norman Lott right away in a large role in a huge capacity as they let him get acclimated to the pro game.
Yeah, I would almost advise it, right? Like let's let these young guys grow and lean on the vets and do those things.
I mean, I don't think in that kind of philosophy, does that make Josh Simmons really the only kind of plug and play rookie out of the entire draft class?
I think Royals probably needs. Well, we'll see. I don't know what to expect of Hollywood Brown's injury. If Hollywood Brown is back, then then we probably wouldn't see a ton of Royals early on. But I've had this feeling for a while that Royals is going to have to do something. And I don't know what that means. That means he catches 2-3 balls a game out of the gates. Maybe that's probably all it is. But it'll be bigger than I think what we thought 2 months ago. But it's Simmons. Yes. Simmons, not just of the rookies. Like Simmons has the weight of the world on his shoulders anyway. Like, we all know what was wrong with the Chiefs last year, and we all know what ultimately cost them the Super Bowl. Good luck, rookie, right? This has been an issue for a long time. They haven't been, like, good at tackle, Tommy. When was the last time they were really good at left tackle?
Eric Fisher.
Patrick Mahomes first started?
Yeah, probably Eric, but I would even say not – at the end of the Eric Fisher era, because
he declined,
you know, a lot over the years. I would.
Orlando Brown was just a placeholder.
Yeah,
he was good.
He was fine.
He was fine. Average.
You probably have to go back to before the Patrick Mahomes era even started. Probably 10 years ago.
I think Fisher was okay his rookie year, but that's a long time ago. Either way, it's been a long time, and it's not like they haven't been trying. Right, to do it. They've been trying every single year to get it better, and they've gotten it, you know, maybe a little bit better, and then it got way worse and was the worst it's been last year. So, like, that weight exists for Josh Simmons. They took him high. It felt like at the time one of those things, as you saw it happening live, where everybody's going to look back and say, how on earth did the league let that dude fall to that team that late in the draft? In the first round. That's what it felt like when they took him. But of course, the elephant in the room was his health. And that's been very good so far. It's been great so far. And it's interesting. Rashawn Slater, the left tackle for the Chargers, that's the same injury, right? It's the injury he just suffered that'll put him out for the year, I believe, that Josh Simmons had. Nobody's having the conversation about Slater like, oh, his career's over. I don't know if he'll ever play again. No, it's like, it sucks. He'll be out of here and then he'll be back and he'll be fine. That surprises me in drafts when we see stuff like that. We saw the same thing. And granted, Trey Smith's was a little bit different. But when guys get downgraded that much because of a medical thing, it does always surprise me a little bit. Like you're willing to take risks on the things that you're willing to take risks on in the NFL and the draft process and all of that, but you won't take that risk. You'll let Shedeur Sanders fall to the fourth round because he's arrogant, but you'll take some of the other risks that we see teams take, like the things that they're willing to, you know, not bat an eye at, and then the things that they hold against draft picks always surprises me. And they may have been lucky with Josh.
Look, I mean, you bring up Shedeur Sanders in that example. I mean, there is the weight of the world of the weight of the franchise rests on the shoulders of a quarterback. And so the risk to take a quarterback is that can make or break your franchise, and that can make or break a career of a general manager. And so, like, I think it's apples and oranges when you're talking about
a
risk that you take.
The fourth round, though, you've got a guy that's a, you know, that by a lot of accounts is a first round talent falling because of the reason he fell. Josh Simmons, who appears to be like as, you know, cookie cutter great left tackle as you can get, falling for a medical reason that doesn't like end careers, by the way. Like it's not a medical, like to not be willing to take those kinds of risks, but then risk it for guys who have, you know, abused women or done some really stupid or terrible things. Like that's what surprises me sometimes. And that's not a Shedeur Sanders conversation. It just kind of popped into my head. It's more about like how lucky potentially the Chiefs got in that situation. When the Patriots were in their prime, it felt like they would get players where you're like, how did they even get him? The Ravens, I feel like, have done this for years, where you're just like, how do these guys keep falling to the Ravens in the draft? The Ravens have had great draft. The Ravens have been good for 20 years. Like, when was the last time the Ravens were bad? I mean, honestly, when was the last time?
It's been a long time. I mean, before John Harbaugh was the coach.
Yeah, like, they've been good forever, right? And they always drafted great players late in the first round. And I remember, like, as a kid, I was like, how do they do that? Well, that's the way Josh Simmons feels for the Chiefs. And if that does solve their problem, it totally changes like a window. Like, is this window closing with Kelsey getting older and Jones getting older? Maybe. But man, if they just lucked into their anchor left tackle that's not going to cost them any money for a little while, and that, like, no, probably not. The Chiefs may be in that same boat as the Ravens, where they're just good forever.
And it is fair to say that Brett Veach has had mixed reviews in drafting in the first round over his tenure. I mean, think of guys like Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Felix Anudike Uzomah. Like, those were swings and misses in the first round. Those were reaches. If Josh Simmons can project out to be an anchor left tackle for years to come in the league, I mean, that's a huge feather in the cap for the tenure of Brett Veach as the general manager. I can't remember. Brett Veach was not the general manager when Mahomes was drafted, correct? It was John Dorsey. Wasn't he the GM at that time? So yeah. You can't credit necessarily Brett Veach. You know, I know he was with the team and all of that. He's been with the team for a long time, but you know, like, it's been a mixed bag for Brett Veach drafting in the first round. And part of it is how difficult it is to consistently draft at 31, 32 year in and year out.
He may have taken over in 2017.
Did he? Okay, so maybe he can be credited then with the...
He came in after the draft.
Okay,
though.
Gotcha.
What was
okay.
he doing? He was the co-director of player personnel.
So he was involved. He was a large role in that. But when he's been at the helm, there have been, let's be honest, there have been some big swings and misses in the first round for Brett Veach. And so a Josh Simmons type draft pick, if he can be an anchor and solve that issue long term for Kansas City and project out to be a star in this league at left tackle, you quickly forget about some of the missteps in the first round that Brett Veach has had.
Oh, yeah, I don't mind. I don't mind just missing if you're hitting home runs. Like, he's a power hitter, right? He's a cleanup hitter. He hits these home runs in the first round. Trent McDuffie, George Karloftis. Was Bolton the first rounder? Like, he hits...
No.
He gets all these players that are long time... Like, that's fine if you miss occasionally, because you're basically picking every... Like, you start the draft every year in the second round, essentially, because you're picking the last handful of picks. I got no problem. I think
the two glaring ones were Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Felix Anudike Uzomah. Both those guys were reaches when they were picked.
They were reaches. And they were need-based reaches.
Clyde Edwards-Helaire was not a need-based risk, not a need-based reach. That was Patrick Mahomes wanted Clyde Edwards-Helaire on the team and called Brett Veach and told him draft him.
Who was going to be the running back that year? That was a need-based.
In the first round, it absolutely was not a need-based reach. They could have gotten any other running back to start at any other point in the draft. They didn't need to take him. But it wasn't a need. I don't think it was a need-based reach. Like, they could have absolutely
waited. I think they needed a running back. I don't remember who was there if they didn't take him. But
if memory serves, they had, like, Damian Williams at that time. Like, I think they had just come off of the Super Bowl, and he had a good season that year. I think they were coming off of him. I don't think they needed a running back.
I don't either.
And they certainly didn't need one in the first round. That for me, that was a major miss. And then Felix Anudike Uzomah, I'll agree with you with that one. That was a need-based reach, and I think they liked kind of the local flair, that sort of thing with him coming in from K-State. So neither one of those things panned out, but really, it's a "what have you done for me lately" type league, and if you can have Josh Simmons come in and be somebody of significance, then I mean that's a huge feather in the cap.
Tommy, KU gets a big gift. We got this. This happened as we were wrapping yesterday. $300 million donation. We think a lot now about like, okay, well, what does that mean, right? Like, what does that do for Kansas? We know it sounds like, what, about $75 million will speed up and help finish the Gateway District to the football stadium area. I love hearing that because you've had all the debates and conversations and things about, you know, how much taxpayer, like, hopefully that just helps get that done and we don't have to worry about that as much. And then the rest of it just, it says, goes to help Kansas athletics, which I think we all can understand the meaning there. It's going to fill the coffers to help them, you know, utilize their salary cap, basically. And I think that is a huge, it's got to be just a huge weight off the shoulders. I don't know how hard it is going to be for teams all across the country to raise the, what is the cap? What's that, 20-something million?
20 million, I believe.
I don't know how hard it's going to be for universities to raise that kind of money to get there, right? But we now know for probably the next, let's call it decade, Kansas has to worry a whole lot less about it because it's there. And is that an advantage? I'm not sure yet. We don't know. Like, we don't know what kind of money these schools, maybe everybody can raise $20 million. I don't know. I don't think anybody knows yet. But it certainly makes life a little easier for KU athletics.
Well, it definitely sounds like this gift from David Booth is basically all-encompassing. I mean, it goes to complete the stadium project that's been much needed for a long time up at Kansas. I mean, the facilities were at one point the worst in the Big 12, one of the worst in the country, and a huge contributing factor to how far that football program had fallen in recent years. That's a huge part of it, to just get that done and not have to worry about, as you mentioned, the debate about taxpayer dollars and how it's going to be funded, and, you know, going out and doing a capital campaign and trying to get other donations from people. I mean, really, at the end of the day, like, that just kind of takes care of that, which is good. And then it spans a lot of different things. I would imagine other facility needs and revenue sharing and NIL and just, you know, making sure coaches' salaries. I mean, who knows? Like, it could go to a wide variety of places. $300 million can take the weight of the world off the shoulders of the entire athletic department for years to come. So from a competitive nature, you would think you could probably draw a correlation that the added funds will, you know, in a roundabout way, help the competitive nature of Kansas athletics. But even just at a more basic level, just going to help fund the things that the university needs in the athletic department, that by itself has got to be a major, major, major benefit to Kansas.
It will be. It'll be easier. I just, like, if I'm Booth, or if I'm doing this, I got to make sure majority of this is going to players. Like, and this is not like, no offense to any, like, sometimes when you get a blank check, it's like, we can, and we see this at universities, I think, a lot. Like, do we really need that? Like, we see it in government a lot. Like, do we really need to spend that kind of money on that? Like, what do we? So I think it'll be interesting. Booth is a more general donor for sure. And this is a more general gift. But I wonder what it's like in the process of these administrators as they're trying to go raise these funds, like, how many times they'll hear, but this money needs to go to the salary cap, right? This money needs to be about us getting players. I think probably a lot. I mean, that's what I would want. Like, if I was willing to make that kind of big donation, because ultimately, those things that you're talking about foundationally and fundamentally are good, and they help you win recruiting battles, and I believe all of that. We're going to be, I mean, at least in the beginning part of this, and I think this is where we are now in kind of the Wild West. At the end of the day, it's about how much can you give me, right? It's not about, if you give me a bigger check, I'll play in a dirtier locker room. And so I that may stop with the salary cap. Again, I don't know how that's going to settle out yet. It's going to be totally different forward than it has been the last 2 or 3 years. But I just would want to make sure, like, I'm giving you $75 million for the football stadium. There's that. The rest of this, like, let's focus that money on making sure we're still getting the best players and making sure we get football players in here to do the right things. I wonder how much control gifters are going to want in that. My guess is a lot. Maybe not this one specifically, but otherwise, like, just – I would want that if I was going to do that. And the reasons that people donate are wide ranging. I think most often it's because they want the teams to be successful because that's ultimately what does the most good for the university, not necessarily a shiny new paint job on something. You know, that's where I think this all gets really interesting. But either way, like that is a just a huge, you know, ESPN reporting it as Kansas, claiming it as one of the biggest gifts of all time. It's got to be up there. It's got to be up there.
I mean, as a single gift, for sure. I mean, I would imagine that there are other donors that collectively.
Well, yeah, like T. Boone Pickens.
He's been probably, I don't even know, a billion dollars. I don't even know how much collectively, you know, some of these other major donors have done. But one singular gift of $300 million, that's got to be up there, if not the biggest of all time. I mentioned this very briefly at the end of the show yesterday, that my very first thought when this came out was that it shows me the level of faith and trust that David Booth has in the athletic director, Travis Goff, and the general overall direction of Kansas athletics. And Travis Goff has been on the job for, what, 4 years now, three, 4 years? When you look at where the university was when he took over from an athletics perspective, and specifically football, I mean specifically football, but just generally speaking, things were not in good shape outside of Bill Self and basketball. And even then, that was right in the middle of FBI investigations and the Adidas stuff. And like, there was a lot of drama going on at the university level. You had the Les Miles situation, and Jeff Long had a bunch of issues and he had been let go. And you were wondering, like, can Kansas football ever get it turned around? And like, there were all of these different things that were going on. And one thing that Travis Goff did when he came in, and it took a minute, but he was able to get things stabilized. Like, you don't hear a lot of drama. You know, he went out and hired Lance Leipold, and Leipold went about rebuilding the program from the ground up and trying to make them respectable again. And then Travis Goff set out to build a new stadium, which other athletic directors had done in the past at Kansas, and they were never able to get it done. Travis Goff was able to get it done. Just a lot of different things have happened in the 4 years that Travis Goff has been at the helm. My first thought was David Booth clearly sees that and has a tremendous amount of faith in the direction of the athletics department in general at Kansas.
Well, that comes with it. And that's, you know, I think that's where we're getting with Wichita State, for instance. Like we hear Kevin Saul talk about this, and I do think he's right. Like, if you can't get the foundation set up, then you got to be able to, like, you've got to inspire confidence in people to give their money to you, right? Like, that's a part of anything. And so Kansas has clearly done that. How could you not be impressed with what's happened with that football program?
There can't be shortcuts. There you cannot shortcut your way. They tried that.
Didn't work.
You can't shortcut your way to success. Like, the Jeff Long and Les Miles era should be a cautionary tale for other universities that you can't shortcut your way to success.
And I don't want to.
You've
got to
lay
totally
the foundation
on that, because a lot of Les Miles players did help also build this. Right? Those
sure.
were Les Miles players.
Sure.
A lot of them that helped build this too. So,
but it was also an abject failure. But it was also a circus, and it was built as like a reality show, like a legitimate ESPN reality show. Like, that was part of the whole, like, bringing in these two clowns to Lawrence was to put them on TV to show this rebuild that ultimately didn't happen under their watch. And there were players like you mentioned, I'm not going to try to say that they didn't bring in some players that had a lot of success, because they did. Jalen Daniels was one of them, right? Like, he's still on the team now. He's still in the program now. So, like, look, I think that, generally speaking though, I think you can let what Kansas tried to do as far as shortcutting their way to success be a cautionary tale for athletic departments like Wichita State. Like, you've got to lay the foundation, and that's what Kevin Saul is doing. It takes a long time, it's hard.
Would have loved some shortcuts.
100%, but it doesn't usually pan out that way.
But it still has to work. And that's the hardest part. And it has for KU, and they got the right guy. And Leipold has built that up, and they're fortunate that they haven't had to worry about men's basketball. Certainly makes your job easier. And women's basketball has gotten better in the last few years. And that's where I think a donation like this can really, really help, because only so much can be spent on a cap. So now how do you win recruiting battles in women's basketball? Well, you show a commitment to women's basketball, right? How do you win recruiting battles in baseball? You show a commitment to baseball, whether it's through, you know, you can only spend so much on the salaries. So now maybe it's, here's also this facility, or this is how we travel, or whatever. But KU fans, I know, are fired up about this, and they should be. I don't know how much wins and losses wise it helps. I think it at least, though, alleviates that initial concern. And maybe I have it more than I should. But my initial thought with all this is, are these teams going to have $20 million to spend? You know, all these football schools going to have $20 million to spend on players? Kansas doesn't have to worry about that part now. And that's, to me, the biggest thing about this gift is that part. That initial stress is gone for a little while, right? And now all the money you raise can maybe kick that can down the road, and you can know we're funded. Like, our cap money is funded for the next 20 years. That'd be my goal. You don't have to worry about that part anymore. Now you can go do the rest. That could go to another raise for Lance Leipold, which, you know, could be down the road. All those kinds of things, I think, to not have the stress of raising that particular funding has to make you more successful. It has to make Goff's job easier and his ability to maneuver it a little bit easier. So KU fans are fired up about that, as they should be today. That happened yesterday, $300 million, David Booth. Stadium's already named after him. Not sure what else you can name after him.
Can you rename the university, the University of Booth? Like, you might have to do that at this
University
at this
of
point.
Kansas, brought to you by David Booth.
Yeah.
Sponsored
or
by.
They're not the Jayhawks anymore. They're the Booths. I think you're going to throw his name up everywhere. His name is already on the stadium.
Basketball. Yeah. Like, what else are you going to do? What else can you do? We've all got our hobbies. I invest way too much in, fantasy football. He's a Jayhawk fan. That's his hobby. And it's cool to see. It's good. Glad Kansas is able to reap the benefits of that. Now they got to go win some games, which will be interesting. We'll have Tim Fitzgerald, speaking of winning games, talking about how many he thinks K-State might win this year. That's coming up in our next hour. We got a lot more coming for you. We haven't even talked about that Royals game yesterday. It's because it's kind of hard to talk about. We'll do that, though, in the next hour. Don't go away. More Sports Daily coming your way.
Welcome back, everybody, to Sports Daily. It is the second hour of our program here on this Thursday. Tommy Caster, Jacob Albrecht, Max Power producing the program. The KFH hotline is open for you at 869-1240. You can also leave us your video comments. You can do that at any time. All you have to do is watch our video stream on YouTube, on X, on Facebook. Leave your comments. We'll get to them as the show rolls on. You can also leave us a voice memo by listening to the show on the free Odyssey app, and then you click the microphone button. You can leave us a message. It's like leaving a voicemail. We can play that back for you on the air. We've got a lot coming up here in the second hour of the program. Tim Fitzgerald, our K-State insider, will be coming up a little bit later on to preview the big game coming up in Dublin, Ireland, as the Wildcats and Iowa State play next Saturday. We're going to get into the Royals as well. The BMW Championship on the PGA Tour tees off today. Sam Stevens will start his round coming up in about an hour from now. So that's going to be coming up as well. We'll give you more of an update as today and tomorrow go on for that BMW Championship. A lot to get to here on the program, Jacob.
Yeah, it's a big day. It's a big day for a lot of kids in the area going back to school. It's a big day as colleges are kind of getting back on campus and we're getting ready for football season. And we've got football coming up in 9 days. Is that right? We've got K-State and KU both playing week zero. This college football, and I know it's because of week zero, it really is sneaking up. That one's sneaking up. I don't think the NFL's sneaking up. I think it can't get here soon enough, right? Like, we're just like, all right, that's enough. Like, we've seen a preseason game. That's enough. Let's get on to the next one. College football's sneaking up. It's going to be here next weekend, which is wild, wild stuff. Speaking of the preseason in the NFL, Tommy, yesterday, Andy Reid, it was a little strange. He was talking about Friday because they end camp yesterday. I think they're off today, and then they play Friday out in Seattle. Game you'll see on 12 News, by the way, KWCH. 9 o'clock kickoff. Get ready to stay up late. I don't know how much they're going to play their starters. Andy Reid didn't even try to pretend. Like, he said he's probably going to sit a lot of starters out. I think, and I don't think he's done this before, I think we may see little to no starters this week, and then they'll get their most work next week. It feels like in the past he has gone in order, right? Like a quarter in the first game, a series in the first game, maybe a quarter in the second game, and then nothing in the third. Kind of getting the indication maybe he's going to go a little more nothing in the second game this year, which is interesting. And he used a lot of reasons. He said he wanted to give Brett Veach enough time to look at certain guys. We know they'll have position battles. I'm not sure what to expect now based on what he said yesterday, but that's kind of what we're looking at here. It is a little more unknown maybe than normal.
Isn't it usually exercise in futility to try to figure out what Andy Reid's going to do in the preseason?
But he always does the same thing. It's an exercise in futility to listen to what he says, but it's because he always does the same thing.
Yeah.
But he's telling us now he may not play the starters. That's not
and normal. Then watch like, them come out and play the entire first half. I mean, like, I just that's great. I mean, I know that he's going to have to be interviewed because he's the head coach and he's going to have to talk about this stuff. I pay zero attention at this point with Andy Reid and how like him talking about his strategy and playing players in the preseason, because he usually says one thing and then the complete opposite typically happens. So I don't know. I mean, like, I wouldn't be shocked to see the starters play a decent amount in the game on Saturday. I wouldn't be shocked if they didn't play a single snap. I mean, like, at this point I throw my hands up in the air in the preseason because I've got no way to predict one way or the other what Andy Reid is going to do with the starter. So I just kind of let it fly.
Yeah, I'm not too worried about it. I do think it's interesting though, strategically, to think about it that way. That's what really piqued my interest. It's like, well, wait, does it make more sense? And every team does this differently. It kind of does make sense if you're going to hold them out of one of them to make it the second one and not the third, because then they have to go so long between the third and playing an actual game. It does make more to give them the third, and then you just have 1 week. It's like a bye week at that point. I think they might do it. And honestly, I think it's kind of smart. That maybe makes some sense. Now, what does that mean for Josh Simmons, the most important preseason player for the Chiefs? Even if the starters don't play, I would guess he would get some reps out there, right? I would guess the rookies get some reps one way or the other because they still need the work. That I was listening, it was Matt Derrick. I saw a clip. It was trying to, you know, kind of go through some of the all 22 evaluations of Simmons. And he said maybe the only negative is he was tipping his hand a little bit at whether it was a run or a pass by the way he was lining up. Like the only thing he could say. So there's little stuff like that that you probably like some of the young players to get an opportunity to work through. I think if you're the Chiefs, you're still trying to find your left guard. Don't like whether it's with starters, without starters, like, you kind of just got to still figure out what you're going to do there. So maybe all of those guys should get some reps in every preseason game to try and help you evaluate that for sure.
To your point, in my mind, it's less about the starters and who gets the reps in that regard. And it's more about the specific positional battles as we're moving forward. And it's not even necessarily about who's going to make the team. I mean, there's a little bit of storyline with that.
There's
who could get
that.
Cut. Like that, that's always there for sure. But for me, it's more about, okay, which positions on both sides of the ball are open for competition where we don't fully know who the starter is going to be. We don't fully know how that's going to line out. I would say first and foremost, it's probably left guard. That's got to be, I think, number one. That's the most glaring hole with the loss of Joe Tooney and all of that. What are they going to do there? Who's going to start the season at that position? That's probably number one. Defensive line is there, too. Again, opposite of Chris Jones and the positional battle there. Will they roll with the rookie Norman Lott? Will they roll with Jerry Tillery, the veteran? Mike Dana is still on the roster. What are they going to do in that regard? Because they don't have Tershawn Wharton anymore. And so that's got to be, I think, one of them. Secondary, there's going to be some positional battles there, I would imagine. Also, how does the depth chart line out outside of Trent McDuffie? How are they filling that role? There are some other, I think the positional battles for me are probably that's more intriguing to keep an eye on in the next two preseason games compared to like which starters get the reps and which ones don't.
right. And it's not even the battles. The battles aren't even really battles, are they? Like, it's not so much that it's a battle what they're going to do at running back. It's just a strategy. I don't think any of the players are going to do something to win a job. They just have to make some decisions based on roster construction as much as anything else. There might be some battles in some places, but the ones that we're most notably thinking about at wide receiver, at running back, I mean, is Sky Moore going to elevate himself over anybody on the depth chart currently? No, I don't think so. Is Nico Remigio going to? No, it'll be, do we want Remigio for special teams? What does that mean for running back? Are we keeping four tight ends? I think that's the stuff. And so it really doesn't, like in a lot of those situations, doesn't even really matter what happens.
Left guard is a battle. Left guard is a positional battle.
Left guard is absolutely a battle. But nobody that's in that battle is in danger of being cut, right? There are cuts that have to happen at the other ones that, again, I don't think that'll have anything to do with what happens in a preseason game. Left guard, yes. Left guard has to do with what happens, I think, in a preseason game. Where else are you going to determine that? You got to have as close to live bullets as you can get to throw those guys out there and see what sticks. Again, this will be the fallout of trading Joe Tooney, right? We knew that there would be some. It won't be as bad as not having a left tackle. The Chiefs told us that last year because they moved Joe Tooney to left tackle. They already told us it's more of a priority. So yeah, they're going to lose something at left tackle. There's no way they won't. They traded one of the best in at left guard. I mean, they traded one of the best in football. Who can just be okay in that spot? I think that's the big question. I don't know who I think it'll be right now. I really don't. I mean, who do you think it's going to be? Jalen Moore? I really don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the Chiefs are telling us that they really desperately want it to be Kingsley Suamataia. Whether or not he can actually be capable of it, the jury is still out on that.
You can't do with him what you did last year and just put him out there to fail. Can't do it again.
Well, and they're not going to have to. Even if they really want him to be the left guard, they're not going to have to because they should have a contingency plan in Jalen Moore. I don't know how he grades out at the guard position versus, you know, he's always been a tackle, at least in his time in the NFL. So I don't know how he grades out, you know, left tackle as of now, but they, at least I feel like they've got more depth where before it was like Suamataia or bust. And I know they had Wanya Morris and all of that, but like it was, they were putting the hopes and dreams at left tackle on Kingsley Suamataia. They're going to try, I think, to do the same thing this year with him at left guard. It's a less impactful position. So, you know, maybe that will help. But they want to see the return on their investment with him. And I don't blame them. I don't blame them. They drafted him fairly early in the draft. They want to see that return. I would be surprised if it happens though. The reviews are not good as of right now for Suamataia at any position in the starting rotation at the offensive line.
Yeah, it's not a problem, but it's just something to watch, and we will Friday night. When we come back, let's talk about that Royals big old dud yesterday. That's next on Sports Daily.
What does possibility mean to you?
That's a hard question.
something that you can strive for.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
You're confident in yourself and you believe in yourself. Stuff that you could achieve.
I feel excited. Anything is possible when you're more confident.
Shoes are a huge part of that. They are the most important part of my style.
You can like express yourself
in the right shoes.
Anything is possible.
DSW, countless shoes at bragworthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features swift rinse tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit DollarShaveClub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily here on your way into work. I want to keep listening to Sports Daily, even after you park the car. With the Odyssey app and Odyssey.com, you can. Just download the app or visit Odyssey.com and search for KFH. If you want to win some HTO right now, you can by texting the keyword tea to 20357. That'll get you a free iced tea, more than 25 flavors to choose from at either the East or West Wichita HTO or down in Derby. Good luck, everybody. There again, that's tea to 20357. Tommy, we've been putting it off as long as we can here. It's Royals, Royals disaster from yesterday. And it didn't even start as a disaster so much that, you know, Seth Lugo still doesn't look right. Something appears to be off with him. Like his velocity's way down. We'll get to that in a second. It's not even just that. It's that they came all the way back and let go. That's what makes it the most excruciating. If they would have just lost the game, you know, like 8-3 or whatever, it'd be like, whatever. Just chalk it up. But they came all the way back And they and despite coming all the way back, it felt like about 50 times in the game they were leaving too much out there. Like, man, they probably should have had more there. They probably should have had more there.
Yeah, and that was like an almost every inning thing where they ended the inning, you're like, man, they should have scored more runs in that particular inning. Yeah. They had opportunities to do that. I saw a stat that I sent to you after the game that in the last two losses, the Royals obviously lost in extra innings on Sunday in the finale against the Twins, and then yesterday. So their last two losses, in those two losses, the Royals were 5-for-32 with runners in scoring position. And that's not going to get it done. Now, of course, sandwiched in between those two losses were two wins, Monday and Tuesday, where they offensively looked really, really good. So kind of cherry-picking stats a little bit in their last two losses, but clearly the reasons that they could have very easily been 4-0 in their last four games, losing in extras on Sunday and losing yesterday. Both of those games could have been wins, probably should have been wins from the Royals, and we'd be looking at a team that, if that happened, if they were able to actually convert those runners in scoring position in both of those games and win, then you're talking about a team that is three games over 500. Instead, they're one game under 500 after those two losses.
And there's just not any room for that anymore. Like, it's just not. Like, they cannot be losing games they have in their grasp. They can't. I think Quatraro deserves some heat for yesterday. You left Seth Lugo in that game way too long. You've got to come in knowing he hasn't looked right for a little while, right? So why would you give him a long leash? Why was yesterday the day going into a day off the day that Seth Lugo gets this long leash when he's clearly not right? Tommy, his whip has jumped from a little over one to now almost 1.25. His last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, he has not allowed one runner fewer in his last seven starts, right? Since basically July 4th. And it's been getting worse. So like his ERA's risen more than a run since that point, since July. Something isn't right with him. Like, we know it's not right. We can all see it. Yet you're going to leave him out there like that when things are so desperate. He gave up a five spot in the first. Okay. All right. Like, you're going to let him work through that. Fine. I don't think that was the right decision, but he looks right. Then you let him give up another one in the third. And then you let him give up another one in the fourth. Like, what are we doing? Get him out of the game. You got a day off.
Yeah, I'm concerned that there are some long-term, you know, some potential serious issues with Seth Lugo, and I don't know from an injury perspective what that is.
The Royals haven't said,
you know, they haven't been open or clear about if there's anything health-wise going on with him, but there's clearly, you know, there's something going on there. Like you mentioned, the velocity is down, the placement is not good. I mean, he was throwing meatballs basically right across the middle of the plate, right? And so, like, he didn't look right. And that's all we know as of right now, just from what our eyes tell us, he doesn't look right out there. And I thought that it was impressive that the Royals offensively were able to battle back. The bats are alive. That's been really good. It's disappointing that they squandered a phenomenal game from Vinny Pasquantino yet again. I mean, Pasquantino has looked outstanding the last several games offensively. You know, I tweeted after he hit that three-run bomb that he's going to single-handedly try to get this team to the playoffs. Like, the team is on his back offensively, especially. And then, you know, the Royals essentially squander that performance, which that was wildly disappointing.
It was. And that's where that's what annoys me so much about it is it was awesome that they were able to come back. Washington's got one of the worst pitching staffs in all of baseball. So you like even at 5-0, it was like, okay, it's the first inning here. They could be okay. And then they immediately get two. And honestly, the feeling for me was like, oh yeah, they'll be fine. But they got to keep it, you know, they got to keep it here. And then the Lugo thing, and he keeps him out there. And I'm like, God dang it. Like, what are we letting this game? Like, why are we letting Washington do this? Lugo's not right. So then you get all the way through. They get Lugo pulled out. The bullpen comes in, does, you know, kind of what you would expect the bullpen to do, which is be effective. And you get it into a late inning situation. And Tommy, what happened in the game they lost the other day? Carlos Estevez in save situations is like lights out. In non-save situations, he is not good. And this has happened all year long. We have a long track record of this. We know this is a thing for closers in general. There are a lot of closers that are like this. You put them in that save situation, and they are going to strangle the other team into submission. You put them in any other time when the emotions are a little bit different, and they're not as effective.
It sure sounds like, though,
all year.
It sure sounds like, I mean, they used Ursig in a save situation on Tuesday night. So maybe he wasn't available.
That's because Estevez had pitched back-to-back night.
So, you know, if he wasn't available yesterday, I don't know if Cutrero felt like that was his only option. I mean, this is where the kind of lack of depth in the back end of the bullpen, you don't have Hunter Harvey anymore. He's on the IL. Like, where else are you going to go? I mean, I guess they could have went Schreiber. They could have went Zerpa. You know, like, that. There were, I guess, a couple of different options potentially. It wasn't an ideal situation. I agree with you that Estevez shouldn't have been out there in a non-safe situation because he's been flat out bad in non-safe situations this year. But then you also have to think, what's the other option? Who else is available that Cutrero could have gone within a tie game?
Well, I mean, anybody at this point, because I just like it. We've seen it enough now, and I haven't gone through and looked at like every time he's taken a loss. I mean, we can. But it's just not like it. We can all see what's going on here. Like, he's just, when he's in it, whether it be extra innings with a runner on second or whatever it is, like, that is not the situation for Carlos Estevez where he's been good this year. And if it doesn't present itself, like, would you, I guess we can't be revisionists. Like, had they not gone to Carlos Estevez, would you have been okay? You know, like, would you have been okay if they went with Zerpin? I've got to be willing to say that I would be.
Right.
Because I give them grief sometimes when they do that. But at this point, we've seen it. The Minnesota loss was extra innings. There was a Miami game that he lost. Most recently before that was extra innings. They're all over the place. Whenever he's the reason they lose a game, it's because it was not in regular. It wasn't in his spot. And that maybe he should be able to do that. But when these margins are as thin as they are, I mean, you've got to be ready to be desperate. And if that means going a little outside the box, then go a little outside the box.
Yeah, they could have thrown Zerpa, they could have thrown Schreiber. Those were probably the other two options. Schreiber has pitched a little bit more recently than Zerpa has. But, you know, Zerpa, he pitched on Tuesday. No, he didn't. He hasn't pitched since Monday. So Zerpa would have been on a couple of days rest. He pitched an inning in relief in Monday's game. In theory, they could. Schreiber's pitched a little bit more recently than Zerpa has. So that probably would have been the alternative. Like, can we sit back and say that in a tie game in the ninth inning, we would have been okay with Zerpa over Estevez?
And so I'm going back. So it's the last four that I can find. The last four times Estevez has had the loss, every single time it's been in a non-save situation.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah.
It's not in a normal circumstance. The A's loss in mid-June, that was a tie game going into the ninth when he came into the game. Jesse says, I know managers are supposed to be very patient and not overreact to trends the way the fans would like to, which is a good point. But Q seems extremely slow to react to what we are seeing, what are seemingly obvious trends. Yeah, I would agree with that. Now, I don't always think that's a bad thing. But he definitely doesn't overreact. It took a long time to move Jonathan India out of the leadoff spot, even though Jonathan India has struggled this year. He continues to try to use Carlos Estevez in situations that aren't cookie cutter, which has not been the most effective thing to do this year. Sticking with Seth Lugo, even though we all knew in the back of our head yesterday, something's wrong with Lugo. And then he comes out and gives up a five spot in the first, and you just roll him out there. Like we knew something was wrong going into that game. Clearly it is, Like, you can't just keep running him out there. It's a and the so other do you thing do is there them? Was like, no what, need to be desperate. They have a day
right.
off today.
But what do you do with Lugo long term? I'm not even talking about the game yesterday, because that was a simple,
the
like,
next
pull him.
Thing we got to talk
pull
about.
Him, go to the bullpen, try to get it done with your bats, and try to have your bullpen back you up. But what do you do long term with Lugo? Because from what I can tell, and I don't know if you've seen anything different, I've not seen any kind of report or anything from Kansas City that there's something
injury-wise,
going on
no.
injury-wise with him. So what do you do?
I'll tell you what I'm afraid of. I'm afraid that because he signed the big deal, there is an immense pressure for him to pitch through something he shouldn't be. That's what I'm afraid of. I'm afraid he's hurt, and I'm afraid he's trying to battle through it because they need him, because they're in a playoff chase, and because he got the big contract. And while I appreciate and respect both of those things, you can't continue to roll them out there to just get shelled. So you got to be careful. I mean, he's given up 6-7, 2-3-2, 5-2. So it's really the last two that have been the most alarming, where that's like not usable. Like, you can't do that. I think maybe giving him a day off in the next time through, maybe a quick 10, maybe you just call it fatigue or something and give him a quick 10-day stay on the IL. If it's not something obvious with his physical stuff, something seems off. It's missing pitches. It's down velocity. It's all the things that have made him great are not working. And it just doesn't make any sense for it to be anything else. Like, Lugo didn't all of a sudden forget how to pitch. We've got a 2.5 year track record of what he does well, right? It didn't just all of a sudden turn off. So I'm afraid he's hurt, and I'm afraid he's trying to pitch through it, which is not good.
Yeah.
Which
so
is not
by the way,
something that you can do
after the game, Lugo talked in the locker room and said that there's nothing wrong with him. His words were that he had completely turned the corner on the injury that he had back in May when he was on the IL for a little while. His words were that he just needs to execute better, and that he said that he called the outing pretty bad, which, yeah, I mean, the outing was pretty bad. But I mean, he from his own mouth is saying that there's absolutely nothing wrong with him. And so, you know, that might actually be a little bit more concerning than if it was just like, yeah, my shoulder is bothering me, my elbow, like, whatever. Like, if you're going to come out and say that there's something wrong physically, that's one thing. But if you're like, yeah, I'm literally just not pitching well, that's a little bit more concerning. Did you know, by the way, in his last three starts since the trade deadline, Lugo has an ERA over 10 in his last three starts? It's a 10.66 ERA in his last three starts.
It's
awful. It's awful.
Yeah. You can't do it. So not when you're in a playoff chase. Like, they just don't have the ability to let him try to work through it. And I'm glad he said that. I don't know that I believe it. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. He hasn't had stretches like this ever that I can remember. Because this is more than just the last two starts. Like, he hasn't looked right in a little while. So, look, if you're going to keep running him out there, it's got to be a shorter leash. That's it. Like, that's got to be the answer. Like, you can't – if he gives up 5 in the first, you got to get him out of the game. Don't let him go into the fourth and give up 2 more. Like, it wasn't – like, something – nothing clicked for him. He doesn't look right. One of our great listeners, Adam, tweeted me because I was just like, who broke him? He was like, his velocity has been way down in this game. He hadn't even touched 90 yet. And I was more concerned with the location than the velocity. And he's not a big velocity guy. But yeah, it's something's not like when you see stuff like that, it's physical. Whether he says he feels good, but it just is. Like, it is what it is. Whether it's an injury or not, it's physical because your velocity's down. It's usually one of the biggest indicators to something being wrong. I hope that's not the case. They need him down the stretch, but what they can't have is that. A game where your offense scores 7 runs and you lose. Like, you cannot do that if you're the Royals. So, is it that big a deal that they lost a game to the Nationals? Probably, because they just don't have much wiggle room left, and it's a game they should have won.
They're running out of games. You're running out of games to be able to make a run.
Does it, like, totally ruin your chances? Absolutely not. You get to come back this weekend, and you get to play 3 games against the White Sox. And then right after that, you get to host 4 games against Texas, a team that absolutely is competing with you for a wild card spot. That series could knock one of those two teams out of this thing. So go win your games against the White Sox. How does that pitching lineup, by the way? What do we have? Cameron, I think, let me see if the Royals have made this official. I think the expectation is that Lorenzen will get the start. Yes, they have announced that. Okay, so Cameron Lorenzen and Burgert will start that series. You're going to have to score some runs in this series. The White Sox, we have learned, they can pitch a little bit. So you're going to need to score some runs in this series and go sweep it. I mean, go sweeten it. Now the emphasis is even bigger. I'm not going to feel good, Tommy, if they take two or three from the White Sox at home like that. I'm done with that against these bad teams. Now, if they do that, you know, if they take three or four against Texas at home, you feel good about that. But two out of three from the Nationals at home, like, yeah, I'm glad they won the series. It should have been a sweep. See what happens against the White Sox. It should be a sweep. They should be able to beat the White Sox three games in a row. That we're to that point of the season. Like, you can't mess around anymore. You're going to run out of games. They're now another game under 500.
Yeah, and they've been it multiple times in the last 2 months. They've been able to get to 500 and never able to get over it. And you've got to, like, if you take two of three, you'll be right back in 500. You can get it. If you get a sweep, you can get over. But this is the opportunity. You're running out of games. You're running out of season, as JJ Piccolo said the other day. You're running out of season to be able to make a run, and you're now 4.5 back in the wild card from the final wild card spot. I think there's a very good chance that we, at the end of the season, look back at the game yesterday and potentially the game on Sunday as two of the most crucial and excruciating losses that the Royals have had.
Yeah. Yep. And look, I am at peace with whatever happens, because at the end of the day, they went through the anemic offensive stretch. They've had all these injuries in the rotation. I still think it's been a successful year because of some of the moves they were able to make at the deadline and some of these other things, but I'm at peace with it, but I'm not ready to let it go yet.
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
That's right. Joining us right now on the program, GoPowerCat.com, publisher, creator, boss, Tim Fitzgerald. I assume appropriately prepping his liver for a big trip to the homeland next week as K-State gets ready to take on Iowa State, a top 25 showdown that could have major implications in determining a Big 12 champion. Fitz, how are you?
I am good. I have so much to do between now and departing. I don't even have time to look forward to the trip.
Well, stop being a Debbie Downer. Get excited.
Here's what's going on. I'm trying to do as much work for next week, this week, because it's a game week. I'm busy in game weeks.
Yeah.
You nailed it in the open. I'm not going to be work ready while in Dublin. I'll be amongst my people doing what we do exceptionally well. And I probably won't want to work at all or be capable of it. So I'm trying to get it all done.
You know, we'll be next week, obviously, previewing the matchup in depth and talking about keys to victory and all of that for the Wildcats. But looking ahead, you know, over the next 9 days with Iowa State and with Matt Campbell and the program he's got there, obviously they're a top 25 team yet again. They're a team that could compete for a Big 12 championship alongside Kansas State and a handful of other teams. What are you most looking for out of Iowa State? Like, what should we be keeping our eyes on leading up to this game as far as the Cyclones are concerned?
Well, they're kind of an unknown because they relied so much on those two receivers the past few years. They were always available for Rocco Becht, and they were fantastic playmakers. And now they're both with the Houston Texans, which is very interesting. So what develops for Iowa State now as their go-to? Because Rocco Becht's kind of a prize fighter, leader. You know, he'll make plays, but it's often getting the ball to someone else. He keeps plays alive. So what will be the nature of their offense in, you know, this rebuild situation? I think K-State has a better grasp on who they are and what they can be that's my guess. I don't cover Iowa State, then probably what Iowa State is going to be offensively.
I agree with that. What do you think the chances are that these end up being the teams that play in a Big 12 championship at the end of the year? I think it's decent.
Yeah, I do too.
Two of the top at least five teams in the league this year.
Particularly if it's a really good game. And so the loss isn't demoralizing to whoever that goes to.
Yeah.
And it's disappointing, but it angers them that they let it go away and slip away, and they can go forward through their season. Yeah, I think these two might be the best teams in the Big 12. You know, there's plenty of other teams that could, you know, fill that category, including someone we don't expect, because that's the way this conference rolls. But yeah, it's entirely possible. And I've been saying this from the start: the loser can't carry this in to the next week or any farther than that. We saw what happened to Florida State, and nobody can afford to do that because, again, these teams could contend for an awful lot. They could contend for a playoff spot, even if not the champion. So they need to recover very quickly.
I sort of feel like Fitz, as we look at this team.
Fitz, what is the key to a Wildcat? Go ahead, Tommy. We may be having a little bit of a technical issue. Fitz, I think you can hear me. What defensively, what is going on with the Cats? What is the expectation? I think offensively, we have a real good expectation. I know you've said you like this Cats defense. Has anything thrown you off of that? Are you more or less optimistic maybe than you were at the beginning of the year?
Well, I mean, we spoke with Joe Klanderman and Matt Wells, the coordinators, and defense coordinator Joe Klanderman pointed out that he was worried about the corners coming into these fall practices. You know, they're young, they're inexperienced, they've got some new guys, they need to figure out their mix. And then on last week he said they've really progressed, and he talks about their depth. They've got depth all across this defense in a manner that maybe they haven't in the past. And you know, last year they were pretty quick to be running a freshman out there at corner, and now they've got guys that come with the, you know, some experience, and or they're young and got their first toes in the water, and now we're going to see where they go. But they feel really good about the defense and where it's at right now.
Is pass rush going to be there?
Well, you would think so, and that's a great question, because someone on that defensive end room has to emerge and be the Felix Anudike-Uzomah or Brendan Mott. They can't do that by committee. And there's a lot of them. I just found out there's a true freshman that's emerged in that group. So they really have eight players at defensive end that can rotate in and out or move into, you know, the four-man front if they need to. So, I'm looking for whoever it is that comes out of that pack and becomes the disruptor for this defense.
Yeah, I think that's a good point on the committee thing, because they haven't ever had to do that, at least not in recent memory. They've kind of had that guy.
Yeah.
Who would be the leader in the clubhouse to be that guy?
I don't know. I mean, they've been talking about Ryan Davis quite a bit. And this young man came with a lot of promise, had flashes last year, but they're saying that his motor, he just constantly goes. And that's what Brendan Mott did. Brendan made up for his lack of size with just pure effort, constantly in motion. And that's what this kid's bringing. But does that mean he's the big-time playmaker because he plays hard? No. So let's see who develops here. But they sure do have a lot of choices. And they'll just go with a hot hand, I think, early in the season.
They do have a lot of choices. Pass catching, it'll be a lot of tight ends, a lot of Dylan Edwards, a lot of Jace Brown. Anybody else stepping up there that could become a playmaking receiver, do you think?
Yeah, Jerron Tibbs is the guy that everyone's talking about. He's a big-bodied guy that runs decently well, but he always makes himself available. He uses his body to get open. He's got great hands. Avery's already shown a desire to get him the ball because he knows he catches it. And let's be honest, that affects a quarterback's confidence if he's getting the ball out there and the receivers are dropping it, which happened a lot last year, or he throws the ball to a spot and they're not there. That can impact the rhythm and confidence and everything. So apparently in practice, Tibbs has been the guy, along with Jace Brown, that Avery can count on.
Fitz, I'm looking here right now in Dublin. It is 2:49 in the afternoon. Are you technically able to join us next Thursday? Do you have that capability? I don't know how that all works.
Yeah, I think so. I have one media availability leading up to the game, and it's in that window, but I don't think it's till like 3:30. I think we'll be able to do this and hopefully, here's the key. This is what works out well for you. If I've got a media availability, I'll be sober.
You can't be tanked.
Yeah, and that's a small window in this trip. Between the game and arrival in the game, there's not going to be many windows of I don't have alcohol surging through me. I'm just being honest here. I'm going to my homeland.
All filled up on Guinness and shepherd's pie.
Yeah, I've been told shepherd's pie over there is lamb.
Ooh.
I think they've got a different name for shepherd's pie. I have that cottage pie, something like that, that I have to make sure I order because I am not a lamb eater.
I'm not either.
I like to wear their clothes, and that's about it.
Yeah, I shepherd's pie, though, is one of my favorites, but with beef. We gotta throw an American spin on that. I'm with you.
Oh, absolutely.
All right,
I'm going to eat a lot of fish and chips. That's all I'm going to do.
GoPowerCat.com. You guys have some special stuff cooking up for us before the trip?
Oh, yeah. Like I said, I'm trying to work ahead. I'm working on a brand new pregame show. We've redone it, and I'm looking forward to that. But you know, the guts of it will kind of be the same. We'll deal with Brian Hanley quite a bit. Cole Carmody's going to scout Iowa State for us. And, man, I can't believe it all got here. And now this whirlwind of trying to get ready to go and get work done is – getting my juices flowing for football, boys.
We got it too. Fitz, go check out the work at GoPowerCat.com. Safe travels. And we'll talk to you from the homeland next week.
Thank you, boys.
There goes Tim Fitzgerald, K-State insider. All the good stuff there. We've got Tommy back here. Sorry for that glitch, everybody. But I think we got it figured out. So that's it, Tom. I just cannot believe how much sooner college football for us starts than the NFL. It like, as we're waiting for the Chiefs and all these things, it's boom, it's in our laps. Like, we've got it. We're ready to roll.
Yeah. And I feel like with K-State in particular, outside of the top stars that we know about and Avery Johnson and Dylan Edwards, a lot of it, I feel like Chris Klieman is keeping pretty close to the vest. Like, I feel like I don't know much about the Wildcat defense outside of a couple of guys like Austin Romain and VJ Payne and others. But I'm really interested to see defensively what Kansas State can throw at Iowa State next weekend. Remember, Iowa State has had K-State's number the last few years. I mean, outside of, I think it was 2022, and that was the year that K-State won the Big 12. I think Iowa State has gotten them in recent subsequent years. So it's going to be important for the Wildcats to get off to a really, really hot start, a really strong start overseas and in Ireland. If they have their sights set on potentially a Big 12 championship and a CFP bid. So it's going to be big. It's been a long time since the Wildcats have beaten Iowa State, but they've got the squad, I think, to get something done.
Iowa State has won 4 out of the last 5. They have won 6 out of the last 8. Now, before that, when you go back to 2017, K-State was on a real heater against them. So, yeah, a little revenge perhaps on the mind there. I like that. I like that thought. And you know, some of these games haven't been particularly close in the losses either to Iowa State. So, a little revenge. K-State is an early favorite in that game if you are a degenerate and have gone ahead and looked ahead to some of those sorts of things. K-State is favored, I believe, by 3.5 at last check. I was comfortable with K-State at that number. So that's where I'm leaning in that game. I just, to Tim's point, and it's exactly where I start with Iowa State, You lose those two kinds of playmaking receivers that they've had a long time. You lose that early in the season. I'll bet on the consistency of the K-State offense and what they have coming back out of the gates there. If they play that game again in a Big 12 championship, it could be a totally different scenario, right? Like that, which is possible. Again, like that, they totally could. They could. They're two of the five favorites. That'll do it for us on Sports Daily today. Thank you to Prairie Fire Coffee for helping us get through as we're almost to Friday and almost to the weekend. No baseball today, Tommy. The worst thing about those kinds of annoying losses is when they are followed by a day off and you get to think about it even longer. I've always hated that in baseball. Bad loss followed by an off day just sucks harder.
Yeah, I heard that the Royals have now lost two closing games of back-to-back series, which they had won the final game of the previous 10. So it's not been a good stretch for the Royals as far as ending series. Hopefully they can turn that around tomorrow with the White Sox.
Yeah, they'll be back for that. We'll be back tomorrow. We will get you set for that Chiefs game. Speaking of the Royals, they will be right back here on KFH tomorrow night against the White Sox. We'll have it all for you. For Tommy, for Max, thanks to Tim Fitzgerald for stopping by. I'm Jacob. We will see you Friday.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
A message from a former New Yorker, presented by Street Easy.
We left Brooklyn Heights in 2021, and we miss it. We went from sharing a neighborhood with a few celebrities to sharing a neighborhood with my wife's parents.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.